PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, my golfing friends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I am your host, Dan Edwards, and with me, a returning guest this week is Mr. Adam Rayberg, a.k.a. Ray Birdie from Bridgestone Golf. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Happy to be on again. Let's talk about some golf and other stuff.
Let's talk about you. What's going on? How's your game?
Oh, man. Game's looking pretty nice lately. For, you know, you always have to manage expectations. But for me, kind of playing to the best of my abilities as a 39-year-old, kind of all I got in the tank these days. So I was very fortunate enough to get up and play Sweetens a few weeks ago and got in a lot of golf. You can kind of treat Sweetens like a lot of golf, to where you can hit some shots and get some work in on your game if you play there enough. We got out there after lunch and we had some meetings with the GM there, at, Matt Adamski. He's pretty awesome. You've probably seen him on the social and stuff. We got a really cool project that we're working on with him that's going to come out next year and going to be shot there in a few months. So that's really exciting. We all know how cool Sweetens is. And yeah, the game of the club is looking good. You know, I like playing at my club. You know where everything is. You know where every bump is. So, you know, the handicap may not travel well because I'm so used to playing there, but getting in some decent rounds, getting in some play, it's getting nice and it's cooling down here in the Atlanta area. So it's not as hot. So love playing this time of year.
Yeah, I kept checking. I think I didn't look at my spam, but I was looking for that invite to Sweetens and I can't seem to find it anywhere. So that's interesting, Adam.
Yeah, well, we had to go. It was for a shoot. So, you know, we had to go scout the golf course. To intimately understand the areas that we want to shoot at, we kind of had to tee it up and make our way around. So, you know, sometimes it's one of those things you just have to do as a part of your job. And, you know, you just got to get out there and do the work, man.
Yeah, just grind it out for sure.
Yeah. We had to do we played like 30 holes. So it took that amount of time. We got out there after lunch. I would have played more, but we played till it was dark, but we had to see every spot that we wanted to do this scout at. So it's totally necessary.
That's fair. You also have a bit of a story to tell us. You played in a pro-am with a fairly well-known athlete. You want to tell us that story up at the senior?
Yeah, so the Bridgestone Senior Players was kind of around July. That's a big premier event for our parent company, Bridgestone Tire. They're a huge sponsor of that event and was super lucky enough to be invited to play in the pro-am with one of the execs there, Brian Zimpel. He's a great golfer. He loves to play. He's the CEO of the CFNA, Accredited Federal Union, under Bridgestone. But he had first pick. So in the pro-am, he's played with Fred. We were going to play with Fred, but Fred had some back issues and he couldn't make it. So Fred was going to be the guy we're going to play with, but he's played with Stricker the year Stricker won, and he played with Jerry Kelly the year Kelly won last year. And we know Jerry Kelly went on to defend, or maybe he'd won the year before and Stricker won. But anyway, we play with Davis Love, and Davis is a past Bridgestone person with us. So before I was in marketing, I was over at the R&D department, and so I had a lot of testing with Davis over the years. He lived in Sea Island, which is like 2.5 hours away from us. So we did a lot of testing with him. So very good relationship with Davis in the past. And it was a very, very enjoyable 18. He's still a phenomenal driver of the ball striker off the charts. So it was good, played decent, you know, kind of hit it around compared to Davis. And he's still 40, 50 yards longer than me, and I don't even think I'm relatively short, but he's still just, you know, club head speed's way up there. He hits it a mile. So that was fun. Davis had a lot of interesting tidbits. That was back in July, and as we all well know, he's been very vocal over the last few months in support of the PGA Tour. So it was very cool to pick his brain early, you know, of that and kind of get where his mindset is on everything and about the PGA Tour and kind of the other tour, the LIV Tour, what's going on over there. So it's a very interesting kind of 18 with Davis, and he's such a great dude. He's one of the best guys that we tested with. A little story here. as we test the players, you know, they're hitting prototypes out into the range. They're just going out there. And, you know, we always go out there and pick them up. And, you know, we go, me, Andrew, and Jonathan or Brady, one of the other guys from R&D, we start walking out to the range. And here comes Davis walking right behind us, you know, to go out there by hand and pick up the prototypes. And we're always like, no, we got it. You know, just chill. You know, Todd. And he's like, no, I'll go help you. It's just like one of those type of things to where he's just a good dude. I mean, he could have stood up on the range and sat in the car and looked at his phone. But he was out there walking the range with us, you know, looking for blank prototypes on the ground and, you know, picking them up and, you know, asking us how many, is that all of them and stuff like that. So Davis is the best. He's such a good guy. He always took care of us. If we went and tested with him, he'd always, hey, you guys want to play? You know, can I help you guys go play out today? And, you know, typically we're testing him at Sea Island or Frederica. So it's always nice to get an invite from those guys and always fun. We all love to play golf. That's why we're a part of this business too, is when we go off, we love to play. And, you know, R&D, Andrew's been so cool about, we always take our clubs, especially if we're driving. We always got the clubs in the car and, you know, we like to get in around if we can, around testing and stuff, whether it's on the road or at the place we're testing the players. But anyway, long story short, Davis is awesome. It was great playing with him. Obviously great to play Firestone.
So I know there was a lot to be said from his perspective, and you're soaking it up, I'm sure, because he's, you know, so close to the situation. But I'm curious about guys like Davis at this point in their life. Do they still kind of grill you like, hey, what's going on with the new products? What's going on with this? Like, where are you guys trending? Do you get a lot of those questions from guys like him?
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, obviously he's a, you know, kind of at the end of his career. He's had a very illustrious career. He's won 21 times on tour. He's got lifetime status and all that. And yeah, he has seen the ball develop all throughout his career. Like a Tiger, Davis, Fred, they played with wound Bellotas and they played with solid core Sirlin. I mean, people forget that in the mid 90s, low 90s, there were tour players playing with two piece solid core Sirlin golf balls. You know, Nick Price ascended to number one in the world and won three majors in the span of 2 years with a two-piece EV extra spin, which was a solid core Sirlin product. And it's just, it, when you think about it, you're like, how the heck is somebody on tour playing with a Sirlin ball? But that was kind of the iteration that was ahead of Bellotta before urethane came out. So yeah, Davis is, you know, he was picking my brain about us talking to the USGA, because there's always that conversation of, are we going to pull the ball back, you know? And there's guys who want the ball to move back some, you know. Typically, it's the guys that are close to retirement and kind of out of the game that want to do that.
Or like leading major tournament winners who made a career out of hitting it further than everyone else. You're talking about
exactly.
Maybe someone like that? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
It's usually somebody who has a real vested interest in keeping their records intact.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems
yeah.
to be that those type of people. Even Tigers came out and said he thinks the ball should be rolled back. So it seems to be those guys, and I mean, who could blame them? They want their records to be standing. They work for those records. You know, Jack won a lot of those records with, you know, a wound rubber Bellotta ball. So yeah, when these new balls come out and he saw Tiger kind of coming up, I'm sure he thought the same thing, you know, bigger headed drivers, you know, he's got a sweet spot this big on the driver. The ball is tighter dispersion. So there's all these conversations with that, with Davis. You know, he's not with us, but he just kind of, he knows that we're very close with the USGA and we talk with them. And, you know, future state stuff, how can the ball get better? Like, that's a lot of the top tour pros who kind of are the 0.001% of players in the world. They're like, you know, what can you guys really do? Like, what else can we do? And, you know, now we're at a point where it's kind of a materials conversation, you know, and you're working to, you know, slowly increase innovation inside the ball. It's going to be real tough to go from like wound Bellotta, solid core to urethane, you know, like those are the type of jumps that are going to be super tough unless the USGA intervenes in some way and puts in a rule that really opens everything up for more innovation, which could happen. That's one thing the USGA has definitely said, that if they did kind of install this rule, they feel like it could be open the floodgates for innovation. Like if they put different parameters on thing, and then companies really had to like figure out ways to make the ball more spinny to get the flight up, or, you know, do this, that, or the other. So there's always that conversation. And, you know, for us, it's a materials thing. That's what we do well at Bridgestone Golf, is we're a rubber company. So we're working with our partners at Bridgestone Tire, our parent company. They have an Akron Tech Center to where they do tons of research on rubber, on all types of polymers. And we send them stuff all the time. They help us in the factory now when we have issues with, you know, cavity durability or defects rates go up in the factory. We start talking to them and they kind of have a fresh eye on things we do in the factory. And that's one of the things that we have that other companies can't really fall back to. They just got to hope that their people inside of their own building got it figured out. But sometimes we lean on those guys to try to help us innovation wise and from a production standpoint.
Yeah. So you mentioned these big jumps in technology, and mm-hmm. obviously we all know what happened at the turn of the century. There was a significant change in the product, the way right. it was designed, the way it was made, and it opened the door for potential like a Bridgestone to redefine the potential sure. of a premium golf ball, which, you know, for me was game changing. I'm not going to say life changing, but certainly game changing. But it's almost like unless something significant comes out, you are leaning towards some more of those incremental changes, like things like durability, using core technology to improve subtle changes in reaction from a different speed perspective, using the same actual golf ball. So it's all really curious. But one of the things I'm really interested in, Adam, is just purely speaking about durability from a premium ball perspective. You know, I know it's a challenging thing to create a ball that has that solid feedback. I don't want to say mm-hmm. term feel, but, you know, a softer outer component while maintaining a condition where it doesn't just get scarred after every single wedge shot. You know, sure. it's not exactly a friendly contact from wedge face to golf ball. So right. I'd love to know, just even if you want to focus on previous development, I'm sure you guys have things in the works, but how much has it changed from a durability perspective?
Yeah, I mean, there is, you know, you're weighing pros and cons of making the ball softer. You know, if you add a firmer mantle layer to a golf ball, you know, you're going to pinch that urethane cover. If you're talking about urethane specifically, you're going to pinch that urethane cover against that kind of backboard, is what I call it. And so, like, you know, a really soft cover versus a really firm mantle layer can give you a lot of spin to where it spins physically off the club, but then it also could give you like a firm feedback as far as like sound and clickiness. So that's one of those things you have to weigh. And I mean, like, for instance, Tiger plays the XS. You know, typically when he comes to us, he says something like, yeah, I'd love some more spin around the greens. Give me all the spin you can. He doesn't spin the ball very much off the tee, so he always asks for more. But, like, you know, we'll put a ball down that we know is going to spin a little bit more, but the moment he hits it and it launches a little bit too high and it sounds a little bit bad, then immediately he says, yeah, that's not in my sound, you know, area. I don't like the way that is. So from a durability standpoint, like your question kind of alluded to, is you're trying to make a durable golf ball because guys are, I mean, they're paying a premium price for these golf balls. You don't want them to fall apart, but they still are a rubber and polymer material. So, like, it's still going, you know, if you thin it from the bunker, you're going to have a mark in it. But, like, you know, now
who does that? Come on.
Yeah. But now if you play it from the fairway and you play the ball like you should, the ball's going to last. I mean, I've had, you know, college kids, we support our college programs, but I've had some college kids tell me, like, dude, I've played a ball for like over 36 holes in competition because the coach is stingy with the balls that you send to us. So we're out there playing with every ball we can. And these college guys are, you know, they're ripping it, you know, well over like 115, 120 from driver standpoint. So the balls are, I mean, they're better than they ever have been durability wise by a large margin. You know, if you were to, we have some upstairs in R&D. If I were to go upstairs and pull some old Baladas or even old urethanes from, you know, the early 2000s, side-by-side comparison, it's not just us. I mean, Bridgestones are great. The good thing about Bridgestone is we mix our urethane with the white paint. We don't paint the outside of the ball. We've kind of said that for years. I feel like pretty familiar with that versus other brands who paint the ball and it's like a urethane coating and then they paint it white around it. You know, they have more of a tendency to scar up because what you're actually doing is ripping the paint layer off the ball versus us. It's just the urethane. So yeah, you may cut the urethane, urethane is obviously tougher than the paint. So like when you hit into a Pro V1, a tireless ball that's painted and you see the little whiskers comes off the ball when your wedge has hit it, that's just the paint peeling off, you know, that one thin 0.0 millimeters layers of paint that they put on it to make it white or off-white, whatever they do. So ours is a more durable from that standpoint that we just don't have to add that outer paint. It's just pure urethane that you're seeing and hitting.
So maybe that's more what my experience has been, because for years I've said that Bridgestone has spectacular durability. I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, you hit some bad shots, like you bought him out in a bunker and sadly your ball is going to have a smiley face on it regardless of what brand or material you're using. But from a visual perspective, you hit 6 or 7 wedge shots. There are, and I will be happy to blast the cheaper like DTC options. I've seen some of these balls nearly fall apart visually just from, you know, a handful of shots. And you can see like on the dimple pattern, it's almost like shifting. It's crazy how much it changes, right? But
you're just peeling that paint layer off is what you're doing, which, you know, deteriorates the integrity of the aerodynamics of the dimple. I mean, so it's like cutting it off.
I have a weird question, and it was like something that was said somewhere, some way, and there's probably no truth to it, but I thought it was funny. There are tour pros who, regardless of equipment manufacturer or ball manufacturer, stick with what works. You know what I mean? And one of the years I heard that Snedeker was obsessed with the ball he was using. He loved it. And he didn't want to move up to the new one because he hit a few and felt that the dirt was sticking to the newer model more. Mm-hmm. Any truth to that?
So it sounds like you know something from.
I don't know anything. This
close
is
to him.
I don't know anything from anyone. I just is so, a story I heard like years ago.
So what happened in one year? I think it was him that we did this test for. He actually noticed at the Masters one year. I think it was him. It was either him or Bryson, but I think it was Brent. He noticed one year at the Masters that his competitor was getting a lot of mud balls. Like it was obviously the Masters, you're not lift clean place in anything, but like it was very wet. And he noticed that the ball had a lot of like dirt on it. And the competitor was using, you know, a Titleist Pro V of some sort, probably Pro V1X, because the Pro V1X, you know, the dimples are very deep and like big. On the Pro V1X, it has less dimples than our ball and it has less dimples than the Pro V. So they're a little bit deeper. It promotes a little bit higher flight. You know, it's a high ball with a lot of spin. So he asked, he was like, so is there any science to say like my ball picks up less dirt? And so that was when I was at R&D. I wasn't in marketing yet. And so we have a jugs machine, just like a baseball machine with the two turning tables that shoot a ball out like in baseball. And it's calibrated for a golf ball, you know, really tight to where the ball will shoot through it. And so what we did is we mounted that on the back of one of our trailers at R&D. And we went out to the fairway and we soaked a fairway and we top dressed it and soaked it and added some more top dress. And we simulated, obviously, a very rainy and wet condition to where a tour player would have a lift clean in place. And obviously in the Masters, they wouldn't. And, you know, Andrew is our, you know, agronomist out there and superintendent, also R&D guy. He did a firmness test on the fairway to where it kind of mimicked, you know, what the PGA Tour has on a day they would have a lift clean in place. So we simulated all that. We basically turned that jug machine straight down and just we matched it up to a descent angle and speed of a driver to mimic it, you know. And then we just fired them right in the gun. Boom, boom, boom. And so we weighed balls before they hit the ground, before we loaded them up, and then we picked them up lightly. And right there in the fairway, we had a machine. We weighed them. And so we just tried to discover, like, does our cover, does the dimple design, is there something that we can have stats on that shows our ball picks up less dirt? And it was true. Like, it, we found out that, you know, the dual dimple design of the Torby X, back then B330, probably with Brandt, we found that ours picked up less debris. And we, you know, obviously when we do a test like that, we add everybody in. We added all four of our models, and we tested Callaway, and we tested Titleist, all their models and stuff. And we did find that our ball, we don't know. We think, you know, it's hard to determine what actually is it. Is it the composition of the dimple? You know, is it the dual dimple, and that the dimple in the bottom is lower end, so it keeps it out? Or is it the fact that we don't paint our ball, and our ball is more, what's the word when it's deters water? I don't know the word. It's eluding me right now. But hydrophobic, that's the word I was looking for. That it's more hydrophobic, and it puts off the water and dampness, therefore the mud doesn't stick to it. So long story short, getting back to your kind of original statement is, you know, we did a test, and we, you know, when those tests turns out in our favor, it's always nice to go back to the pro who has asked those questions and say, like, hey, here's the test results of what we did, and here's your ball, and then here's the other ball, you know, that you played with that day specifically, and there's the differences in mud, you know, and what happens with the ball when it hits the ground. So, yeah, you're less likely to have a mud ball compared to a person with a Titleist ball. So that's the fun stuff that the tour players give us, that, like, even like me and Andrew and all the R&D guys and the production guys don't think about, like, you know, testing the dampness of the ball and see if the coating is more hydrophobic and can wick off, you know, dampness in the water for these tour guys who tee off at 7:30 and they're playing in basically wet conditions. And then the guys who tee off at 1 are playing in, like, premium perfect dry conditions. So every little bit of their crazy minds on the top level, they can help us. It kind of helps us in R&D as well.
So when it comes to something like that, and my story was not technically accurate, but it was, like, in the same avenue, when your next lineup, when your next version of the ball comes out, someone who recognizes that ask you that question again, like, how does this compare from a mud perspective? Are they inclined to call that out and ask it?
Yeah, typically, if it is that guy, like a Snedeker, then we feel like, well, we should do this test in advance. That way, if that question comes up, you know, so, you know, we'll do that, and we'll test the wicking of the cover for, you know, other guys who were worried about dew and water on the ball. So we try to stay out in front. And, you know, if they're busy over at R&D, then it's one of those, if they ask, then we just say, hey, you give us a week and we'll make sure, you know. And typically, unless the materials change and the composition and the specification of the dual dimple changes, then we can make pretty good assumptions that the results will be the same. You know, hey, it's the same dimple that was on your previous ball. The shorty of the cover did not change. And then the clear coat that protects the cover that we put on at the very end did not change either. You know, those are the type of things we could say that, you know. But, like, when we went from a different cover from, you know, the reactive cover to the previous one, yeah, those were the things that, you know, we had some guys say, like, hey, well, does this affect, you know, the ball rolling in the fairway? If it's tackier when it hits the grass, is it, like, all of a sudden stop? Like, I want it to keep rolling on a drive. Like, you know, I want it to stop on the green because of spin. I want it to keep rolling on the fairway because it has low spin. Like, is this going to hurt? So we do things like, you know, robot testing to where we see what first skip does. I mean, we've taken the Photon camera out, and we've tracked when the ball hits the ground, how much deterioration of spin happens. So we see the spin coming here. We track it for the foot before it hits the ground. then it hits the ground, and then we track it for the next foot in the air, and we can do the decay of spin, the decay of the sporters. We can see how much spin decay goes on with the green. And, you know, it's all – obviously, a lot of that stuff's all relative to where that you play. You know, obviously, if you're overseeded fairways, it's going to take more spin away because that grass is very sticky, ryegrass. If you're in dormant, it's probably going to keep tumbling. So, you know, and then there's firmness of the fairways, whether they're wet or firm and stuff like that. So it's kind of all relative, but you can make some assumptions if you're kind of right in the middle is what we do. We get the firmness kind of right there to middle play, not like tour level, but not like super soft. And then you can extrapolate some data up and down pretty easily.
Yeah. You made a good point about different conditions because we have conversations on THP all the time about ball fitting and not just from ball fitting in general, but like what works for our game as we play it. So obviously there's, you can go and you can get on the different options on auto for you guys. There's plenty of ways to better understand what works from a ball perspective. But when you start to isolate the things that matter to you, if you play regularly, unbelievably firm greens, you're going to want a product that spins a lot. And, you know, that's just basic common knowledge. And then if you play incredibly soft greens, well, maybe you can get away with something that spins less so you can improve other components of your game. I want to address that a little bit more because we know, and you and I've talked about it before, whether it's on the podcast or whether it's on THP TV, I'm a weird fit. I've been a weird fit for a while, a high ball player, high spin player, but my big descent angle kind of solves for that green spin condition. So I got into a discussion with some THPers the other day about where they should focus most on a ball fitting. Now, I know you guys are very strongly in the driver swing speed condition. Uh-huh. And, you know, that obviously separates for a lot of golfers the two to pick from. And then you ask about spin rates and things like that. But if you were going into it personally, each year you come out with a new product or every couple of years and you're going to fit your own game, would you start at the green or would you start at the tee?
See, this has been a very debated one of Bridgestone forever because a lot of people do say start from the green and work your way back. What I've found, and quite frankly, coming into Bridgestone, I kind of even felt a little similar to that of like, yeah, you know, you get a lot of strokes around the greens and you really, you know, a lot of shots happen within 100 yards. So doesn't it make sense to kind of start there? But I mean, like, you know, you also putt the ball a lot, but you don't really choose a ball based on putting it. You know, that doesn't really matter. So, you know, you could eliminate a lot of those putts. I mean, you could putt with a range ball. I mean, I get it. People like the feel of certain things on putter, but it's just a round spherical object that you put on a flat surface. That the performance kind of is gone then. I guess my point is like the more data that I began to see, you know, I started doing ball fitting before I moved into the office. I was one of those guys that was putting a tent up and going from golf course to golf course. And, you know, I got my start doing that. And I started seeing a lot of people where they got the biggest benefit. And that's what I usually go to is like, you know, even when I do ball fitting now, you know, I still go out and do them, you know, all the time. And I say, what's most important for your game? And that's a pretty open statement, right? That's like, you know, like, what do you need from a golf ball? What's most important to you? I don't say, what's most important for you off driver? You know, I don't say that. But like, you know, the opening question has always been, what's the most important thing you need from your ball? And you'll get a very good layout. You know, golfers are very honest. They give you, they'll probably tell me about their knee surgery and that they're not playing as well as they used to. And yeah. I'm getting back out there. And you'll get a long-winded answer, which is wonderful. And it's why I love this game and love doing fittings to this day. You'll get a long-winded answer that'll narrow down to like, I want some more spin, you know, or I don't hit it the way I used to 10 years ago. I need more distance. And then it goes down to what you're saying perfectly too about different conditions of the course. Because if that guy plays a course that's tough and fast and the greens are fast, then he's going to say, like, I can't stop it on my greens at my home course. Like, I got to have a ball with spin. And so then our ball fitter, you know, knows to go to one way or the other, you know, here over my shoulder, our ball fitting matrix. And then I had this great, I felt like it was a great post on Twitter the other day. I'd have gotten no interaction, which is totally fine. But there was this chart, and it showed a trend of, like, handicap to swing speed. And it showed that, obviously, if you have a high swing speed, you know, handicaps tend to go down. And as swing speed goes down, handicaps tend to go up. And so in our golf balls, the way we fit, you know, that kind of line in the sand is just one R&D came up with years ago, even before me, of like where these compressions kind of align with that swing speed. And as swing speed goes down, you know, typically, and you're an anomaly. So kick Dan Edwards out of the equation. You're one of the small percentage.
Finish your thought, because I have something I really want to say about these damn grids that are coming out, but go ahead, please.
Yes. But typically a softer compression ball works better with lower swing speeds, which also in turn works better for a little bit higher handicap. So that's the way, you know, fitting has evolved over the years with us, is we found that a softer ball is obviously easier to hit straighter. Yeah, you might not nip it as good around the green and put a ton of spin on it, but like a ball that is softer with lower spin typically seems to help slower swing speed, which also matches up with, you know, handicaps as they go from high to low. And better players that put a lot of spin on the ball, typically like a firmer compression ball, they square the face up a little bit better, and they can control flight. Now, there's obviously anomalies where a guy swings 120 and he's a 25 handicap. And then there's guys like yourself who are great golfers that hit down on the ball and put a lot of spin on it. So the X still doesn't give them enough, you know, cut down on that spin. And so they're an RX player. So, you know, yes, there's, we feel like the ball fitting matrix as we have it, fitting from swing speed, is great for 92-97% of people that go through fitting. But there's always going to be that really great player, like the opposite of you. I've got a guy who plays at our club. He's a 1.3 and he hits it 230, 240 if he's just sitting on it. But he's a great player, and he plays the XS because he needs all the spin he can. But he swings like 92, 91. So there's always going to be that. Bridgestone, we're never sitting here saying, like, you're wrong, Dan Edwards. You are so wrong. We don't even want you playing the ball. You're so wrong about playing the wrong one. We are a ball-fitting company, and we understand there's going to be some lap over in fittings. But from our standpoint, the matrix and how we've done fitting all these years and the data we've seen, we feel like it fits a pretty wide majority of players. And before you get to your point, one other thing about fitting greenside, one of my biggest hits on, you know, balls that are tough to hit is think about if you're trying to – the argument that I've heard a lot too is like, well, higher handicaps miss a lot of greens, so they need a spinny ball so they can get up and down. What is typically the toughest ball in every line, not just ours, but Callaway and Titleist and Strixon? It's the hardest ball to control is usually the firmest, spinniest. It goes all over the place off the tee. You know, you can, you know, better players flight it and they curve it like they want, but like, you put that ball that's tough to hit in the hands of a higher handicap, yeah, they may spin 1 in 10 around the greens where they nip it just right, but like you're killing them from tee all the way to the green. You know, they're hitting balls all over the planet. So, you know, our XS ball, that's the super spinny ball in our line, I would say is the toughest ball in our line to hit, because it has it produces a lot of spin. You're going to have to flight the ball. You're going to have to curve it, you know, or desperately try to hit it straight. You know, that ball is probably the toughest in our line to hit. That's not a ball for a higher handicap. You know, they don't need a super spinny ball, but the RXS, which is a spin cover ball with a very forgiving and low compression core, could be right in the wheelhouse of like, okay, it is still controllable around the greens. I still get enough spin, but off the tee, I'm not really hitting it all over the planet. So that was a long-winded response to that, but I'm very passionate about the time I've spent here and what I've learned. It isn't just something we threw on the wall of like, hey, this is a good idea, and this is the this kind of the opposite of what titles to say, and so let's do it, you know? Like, we feel like they never really said, you know, I don't mean to get big into, like, titleist us, but we feel like they didn't really talk about Greenside starting, you know, that's just how you fit, is green the tee. They didn't really start that until we introduced the ball fitting program, you know, over 10 years ago. Then it kind of came out of, oh, well, you know, it's green the tee, you know, and that's the way you should fit. And, you know, you, it's really from a statistical standpoint, this is the manipulation of statistics, right? It's like, oh, well, you know, certain amount of balls are hit within 100 yards and shouldn't you fit that way? So, like, it sounds like the everyday consumer is like, oh, that kind of makes sense, you know? But then when you look at how golf is played and ball fittings in general, I mean, I guarantee if they did the same thing, they would see a lot of more improvement if they fit more people in the AVX and their tour soft golf ball, you know, those type of balls, they would see dispersion tighter and, you know, proximity to the hole increase. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to have golfers play better golf. And we found that over 105 and under 105 and the specifications that make up those two sets of balls just work better.
Yeah. So about 1,000 things to say to that. But first of all, I have video evidence of you and I collectively agreeing that there are two great balls for me at Bridgestone. One's the X, which I played for many years, and one's the RX, which kind of unlocks extra distance for me, which is kind of funny because I'm conceding spin, which is actually a detriment to my total carry. So that was like that, you know, equation that worked really well. And the other component to that is I think you're absolutely correct when it comes to these. There is an understanding that skill has a reflection to swing speed just by design. I mean, you don't really get, and I think the best example is go to your local gym and find the strongest guy and then tell him to swing a golf club, and then go to a golf team and find the skinniest, lankiest dude and ask him to swing. I can just about guarantee that lanky kid, his mechanics are so much better that his speed is significantly higher. So it's mechanics driven. It's not strength driven, which is uncommon for a lot of things. What drives me nuts is how absolute people treat these graphs with these lines. And I think I am an anomaly, and I think that's a really good thing because I can speak to it a little bit. But the idea that you cannot forget that on the bottom of this graph, there's someone who swings 10 above and 10 below. You cannot ignore that because they both meet in the middle. It's an average of. So the idea of like, I know there's a lot of talk right now, like, well, you know, talking about handicaps, like, well, your skill is here, so your expectation should be here. And I think that's severely limiting people to enjoy the benefits and the skills that they actually have obtained. Because I know, I'm sure you do at your club as well. I bet you know at least five guys who never miss a fairway, but can't putt for anything and are 12 handicaps. Well, you know, a 12 handicap misses the fairway 60% of the time, blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, hold on. There are skills that are obtained. They're the guy who makes, 25 to 26 putts every round, but hits it off the planet OB six times as well. Suddenly he's a 15 handicap. Well, 15 handicaps are expected to miss three putt over 50% of the time from 12 feet. I was like, okay, relax. All right. There's potential for variation there.
This isn't a tour graph where everyone's kind of along. Yeah. This is your everyday golfer. And I totally agree to where you've got, like you just said, a guy who hits it all over the planet, scrapes it around, you know, shoots 78, and you've got an older gentleman who hits it down the middle every time and makes every putt he looks at, and he also shoots 78. there's so many different ways to play the game. And that's why I say, like, you know, that ball fitting chart works for a large majority, but there's always golf is golf, man. It's going to come down to what you do and what you need. And that's my point of asking that question at the beginning of the fitting is like, what's important to you? If a guy says I need to spin the ball, I'm not going to put him in E12 contact at the end of that fitting. It doesn't make sense. You know, like, you know, his performance preference is important, you know, and it's not just all about put you in the spinniest one because you're a 10, so you're not getting up and down. So I'm going to put you in the XS because you miss a, a crap load of greens, so you need all that spin to get up and down. Like, that's a very sell them the tour ball sort of method, you know. Right. And we don't do that. We wanted you to fit. If the E12 contact is what fits you, that's the one we're going to fit you into.
So I got some quick hitter questions, and try not to grind your teeth while I ask you these, okay?
All right.
So very first question, you go out and play with your buddies and you look in their bag, and they might lose a few balls around, but it's not a huge deal. And I'm not talking about competitors. That's not the question. Mm-hmm. The question is, how much does it grind you when he just grabs willy-nilly out of his stack of found golf balls, the various types of balls? So he's got like a Pro V1X and an RX and a, you know...
I hate it. I can't stand it when it's just like, you know, even if it's ours, like, oh, yeah, I'm hitting this E12. And then the next shot they hit an XS. And I'm like golf is hard enough, right?
Yeah.
It's hard enough. Can you imagine? I always say this. Can you imagine if like I just threw you a driver on a certain tee in the middle of your round and said, here, hit this. What's the don't worry about the loft or the shaft or any or the grip. Like, just hit this driver right in the middle of your round. Like, that's the equivalent of hitting a different ball. Like, can you imagine an avid golfer, you just like taking the driver out of their bag, handing them a different model with a different shaft, with a different grip, with who the hell knows what loft, and just saying, here you go. Like, they would think you're insane. But for some reason, we go in the woods and we find a ball who's been sitting there for 3 months and probably is like soaked up humidity. And they like, oh, I found this, you know, excess Tiger ball. I won't even use a competitor. I found this excess Tiger ball. I'm going to play this the rest of the round. And then they're, you know,
yeah.
It blows my mind that like you're spending money and time and your effort, and you're trying, you know, we've got guys who are trying to shoot a score. I want to shoot something with a 7 in front of it, you know, and they're grinding away and they just, oh, I found this one in the water. Yeah, I'm going to put it in play. It's like, you doofus, like just play the same ball the whole round. Like at least eliminate that variable.
Yeah.
You know,
like, but you're adding a whole bunch to it. My thought was more about the varying characteristics of each golf ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If you say you hit your 8 iron, there's another funny thing about golfers. Well, every golfer hits their irons a round number. Well, it's my 9 iron's 150. My 7 iron's 170. you know, there's always a round number in it, but then you add in two different golf balls. I've seen it with your Tour B lineup. I can make the spin change well over 1,000 RPMs from top to bottom. So there's no way that amount of spin change is going to allow me to hit the same shot with the same club. So now,
think of even your scoring irons. Like, think of the difference in hitting, like, going from E12 contact, which is a soft Serlin, very low compression ball, and you were like, you were playing a tour ball that has a lot of spin. I mean, you're gonna hit that ball 5 to 8% longer, with an 8 iron. So all of a sudden, you go from 150 to 163. 168, you know, a little bit further. Like, you're going to hit it 10 yards longer almost, you know, all of a sudden. Like, you know, you're staring the flag down and it's, you know, it goes 40 feet past it. And you're like,
caught a flyer, man. Good.
Yeah, exactly. That's the, I mean, I've been guilty of that in playing in a round with my buddies. Like, you know, we go out with my church friends and stuff. I'll bring them some balls and stuff. And I hit one in the water, so I take my drop. I just reached in the bag, and it was like an E12 or an E6 that I'd got. I usually don't play that, and I just pure an iron shot, and it just flies the green. And I was like, "What happened?" And then I go up and look. I'm like, because I instantly know when I hit it. I was like, "I think I know what I did. I think that was the wrong. That was like, you know, our pastor's ball that I was hitting or something."
Yeah.
And like, I get up to the green, and there it was. It's an E6 off the back edge of the green, and you know, in my mind, I think, you know, 9 iron's 142, and I just hit that 150, you know, or vice versa. So, totally.
The hard part is, you know, obviously there's a cost associated with this, and we're speaking a little bit uppity from
basic
perspective on it.
Yes.
But on the other side of it, you can do this with whatever ball you choose, whether it's a premium ball or, you know, a lower price golf ball. Just play the same ball. And this is the problem I have. I'll find balls all over the golf course and I refuse to keep them because I'm so guilty of like, oh, I'm not having my best day. I'm just going to pick a random ball and play it. So I just give them away, like get them away from me. I'm just going to stick with my ball, with the exception of whenever I find a green and it's not like, it's like a yellow green E6. Yeah. It's always in play only because, and if Adam listens to this, my buddy Adam, we call him Pirate. He's in our foursome. He loses his mind when I play colored balls. So that took way too long. It was supposed to be a quick hitter, but I have another question. Whose looks more like a scratch golfer, Steve Carell or Ryan Gosling?
Like Steve Carell would probably really be, Gosling would be a vanity like scratch golfer who anytime you play with him, you'd never see him shoot under 75.
Okay.
And he would be like grinding over putts and like miscount, like, oh yeah, that was a bogey. And you'd be like, yeah, I knew that was a double. But like Carell feels like a guy who's just totally like, you know, under the radar. His right toe is worn out from all the practice on the range, and definitely more of a Carell.
I saw that picture you posted on your Twitter, and I was like, I don't know which one he's talking about.
Nah.
The scratch golfer versus the guy who says he's a scratch golfer, right? Is that was like the basically the caption. That was great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, sell me on the club twirl real quick. You seem to be entertained by it.
Yeah, I mean, you better hit a good shot if you're going to hit a club twirl. But
really? You're obligated to hit a good shot. Shout out to M Ward, who club twirls while he wakes up in the morning. So,
oh my gosh, dude, if you club twirl it and you miss the green or hit one a little, you know, if you hit the green and you got 30 feet and you just twirled, I mean, good on somebody who's worked the twirl into just every shot, you know, like who is so confident in yourself. I mean, like, I get it. Like sometimes you pure it and it's just like, I don't care where it went. It just felt so good. I gotta twirl it a little bit, but yeah, I typically save that for one you think you just hit tight. And
that's funny.
You hit it tight.
I feel like I would be more inclined to twirl a bad shot than a good one. I don't know what it is about me. Another quick hitter, hopefully, is, well, I mean, this is like when you come on the pod next, but just as like a starting point, how serious are you about people switching up golf balls for winter play?
Well, that's a good question because we just said play the same ball, as much as you can
each round.
Yes. Yeah. But I still believe you should play it multiple, to play it as much as you can. But I truly do get why people switch it up because I mean, like, you know, maybe if you live in Florida, you don't have to, right? It's pretty warm year round, but even here in Georgia, it can get pretty cool in the winter. I've got a lot of friends who switch down to a lower compression ball. I've got friends that switch from RX down to E12. They go all the way down to a Serlin ball. That's a little bit, the E12 is even a little softer than the RX. So, I mean, I'll never shame somebody who does it for feel reasons when it's, you know, when it's cold outside and, you know, the club feels a little numb in your hands and you want to play a ball that's a little bit softer. I totally get that. I mean, typically it is guys that are high IQ level golfers already, so they know what they're kind of trading in for. Well, I played the X and now I'm going to move to the RX. The RX is a little bit softer and it's going to have a little less spin, or I'm going to move from the RX down to the E12. You know, like the course is wet, you know, I don't need hardly any spin around the green. So, you know, like there's those type of things. So I'm not anti. I mean, we're a ball fitting company, so you're kind of moving yourself across the balls, and most people do it in an intelligent way. So I think it's a viable solution. It's mainly just a feel thing, and then you got to understand that you're switching a little bit of performance around. You're not going to get something from one ball that you had in the other, or vice versa. You're going to get more distance out of the E12 because it's lower spin, and you know when it's maybe rainy and wet and cold, the ball's going to spin a little bit more if it gets cold. So, no problem with that.
Good. I like that. We'll dive into that next time if you're willing to come back on. I'm sure you wouldn't mind. It seems to be one of a great experience for me at least. So hopefully you enjoy it as well.
Oh, I enjoy it.
Adam, do you have any questions for me today?
No. Only thing is, how's your game looking? Last time we played, we kind of – we kind of scraped it around up there around Josh. Had a couple of good holes between us, but how's your game looking?
I feel like you just put me on blast here.
What?
I'm spotless. My game is perfect. I don't know what you're talking about.
I wouldn't say it was our best performance.
Not our finest moment. Yeah, I mean, everything underneath driver is pretty spectacular. I put this new 2 utility in the bag that goes really, really far.
Yeah.
So on firm conditions, it's actually really easy to play golf right now. So
yeah,
just please.
Is it a hybrid or is it like a driving iron?
Strong utility iron, buddy. I don't mess those things right now. It's the year of the utility. I got 4. This is going to drive everyone nuts, and I'm glad I'm saying it. I have a driver head cover and 4 additional covers on top of that. Putter, utility.
Oh my goodness.
And
I've got driver, 3 wood, and that's it. I've got a 2 iron.
People say you're not supposed to put head covers on irons, but it's a utility iron, and I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. You can protect it. Yeah.
So
what's wrong with that?
Yeah, no, game's all right. I've actually taken about a week and a half off. A little bit of traveling got me busy. It was actually nice to, let the bones rest a little bit. Too bad I don't exercise a lot. So, I'm not exactly improving my health, but. We'll get back out this weekend. Hopefully it's not a total mess after the little layover. So,
yeah.
Anyways, great to have you on, man. I look forward to seeing what's next from Bridgestone. I pay very close attention to that Tour B lineup. So,
yeah, we've got some exciting stuff coming this coming year. We're finishing up our proto testing and factories kind of working on some pre-testing. So we got a ball or two that we'll be very excited to talk about in a few months here. So
cool.
That's all I can say about we have a new ball that we'll be talking about very soon. So typically we're used to talking about refresh of balls, but we're working on some exciting product.
Awesome. Well, let's have you back on at the appropriate time, and we can all share in the glory of the new awesomeness that is new tech Bridgestone, and I really look forward to the updated mud testing on it. So
yeah, we could talk after I become League 2 champion for all my fantasy football guys in the THP league. So
I am also in a league. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but it says I'm ranked 2nd overall after the draft, so I haven't failed miserably yet. So here we go.
There is no ranking. We haven't played a game a week yet.
It's potential. It's scoring potential. Check it. It's there. Anyways, Adam, thanks, man. We'll have you on again. Everyone out there, if you're playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Make it count. I know you folks like me up here in the Midwest are counting the days of sunlight that we have left, or I guess evenings of sunlight. So go hit some Bridgestones. Check them out if you haven't already. I'm sure you have, but we'll chat with you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.